Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
This tax exemption eludes me like a gazelle eludes an arthritic cat.
Why can't Canby people keep track of their dogs? Like, what is...
To do that, you can't be stupid with guns.
Yeah. Set the board is saying they want to make Canby schools great again.
It feels like we've been doing this interview for years.
Inside of me was screaming.
You run for school board, you win or you die.
There's no second place.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
I'm James Walton.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
A high-speed chase on Highway 99E through Canby Monday afternoon ended with a rollover crash on Interstate 205. It all started when a Canby police officer, who was participating in an unrelated pedestrian safety enforcement operation on South Ivy Street, noticed a large white budget rental truck pulling an empty boat trailer, which matched the description of a suspect vehicle involved in multiple thefts of trailers and gasoline in Canby. Patrol officers initiated a traffic stop on South Lone Elder Road near Highway 170. The truck initially pulled over and stopped, but as police officers approached the vehicle, the driver quickly re-entered the roadway and drove away at a high rate of speed. Thanks to the pedestrian safety enforcement operation, there was an unusually concentrated number of patrol units in the area, and a pursuit ensued. The pursuit wound from 99E into Canby to I-205 northbound, with the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, Oregon City Police Department, and other agencies joining the effort. As Canby Police Lieutenant Jose Gonzalez explained later that day, the coordination and cooperation between multiple agencies is key when a pursuit crosses multiple jurisdictions, as this one did.
And we still have to review the pursuit and everything else, but, you know, supervisors felt that it was with some normal speed, you know, a little higher than normal, but not as reckless as you would have other, you know, cases, and decided to continue with the pursuit and open up at 1099 where it wasn't as much traffic. And then with the combination and other, basically other departments were able to control traffic to let police and the bad guy to go through smoothly, so prevent any collision with, innocent victims.
Law enforcement attempted to stop the truck with spike strips at five separate locations, two of which were ultimately successful in deflating the truck's tires: Highway 99E at the north end of the Molalla River Bridge in Canby, Highway 99E at the South End Road, Highway 99E near the Oregon City Tunnel, Highway 99E at South McLaughlin Boulevard, and I-205 near Johnson Creek Boulevard. The latter two were successful in deflating the tires on the boat trailer and the rear tires of the truck, but the driver continued to flee until deputies successfully initiated a pursuit intervention technique, also called a pit maneuver. Inspired by the bump and run technique in stock car racing, the pit involves using a patrol car with a reinforced bumper to bump a suspect vehicle on the side near the rear wheel. The maneuver caused the truck to spin out, ultimately striking a berm on the side of the road and rolling. Two male occupants were secured by police and transported to a medical facility for treatment and evaluation. The driver was identified by Canby Police as 29-year-old Ryan Anthony Ellis, 29. He faces numerous charges, including attempting to elude police, reckless driving, reckless endangering, resisting arrest, failure to perform the duties of a driver, and second-degree assault. Additionally, the truck Ellis was driving has been confirmed to have been stolen. The passenger, a 39-year-old man who has not been identified, is denying involvement with any criminal activity and has not been taken into custody. Canby police say that they are currently consider him a, quote, possible victim, while they continue to investigate his involvement. The truck was loaded with items, some of which were scattered across the roadway in the rollover crash. Of immediate concern were two metal 55-gallon barrels believed to contain gasoline. Clackamas Fire was called to address this concern and mitigate any environmental impact. Although CCSO reported that the goods in the truck are believed to be stolen, Lieutenant Gonzalez would not go that far. He said only that the investigation is continuing. Although Lieutenant Gonzalez estimated that the chase wound through Canby city limits for less than a minute, it made a big impression on any resident who saw it, many of whom shared their experience on local Facebook pages and groups. Chelsea Deanne Lewis shared what she called a very scary near-death experience, as she claimed she was nearly hit by the suspect vehicle as it barreled recklessly through an intersection. She was in a turning lane attempting to turn onto Highway 99E when a Canby fire truck blared its horn to alert her to the danger. Quote, "The moment I got into the southbound lane, I saw it," she recalled. A huge budget rental truck heading north in the southbound lane, skipping traffic that had backed up at the light by driving in my lane. I barely got out of the way as he flew past me, followed by about 10 police cars in a high-speed chase. She said she's alive now because of the firefighter's warning and plans to bring them some muffins as a token of thanks.
The city of Canby will see far fewer proclamations next year than in its previous years, and there will be new and clear policies concerning which ones are approved and why. Saying he wished to close the loop on a discussion that's been ongoing since at least April, Mayor Brian Hodson announced the new policy in a statement he read at last week's Canby City Council meeting. The review process, initiated after the controversy concerning a request for the proclamation recognizing International Transgender Day of Visibility that Mayor Hodson denied, included a working group of three councilors, Tracy Hensley, Sean Varwig, and Tracy Height, who resigned several months ago for unrelated reasons. The problem most councilors have with proclamations, according to Hodson, is simple. There are just too many of them.
Part of our city meetings for longer than the 10 years I've been on the council. They are an important piece to many of our organizations and even to some of our boards. When we review the list of proclamations we have read over the last 2 years, they have served a purpose of drawing attention to groups or organizations in our city that are supporting or hosting an event, a day, a week, or month, and asking for all of us to recognize those and or participate. We have read approximately 25 proclamations each of the last 2 years. The message delivered by many of the counselors is that's just too many. As one counselor stated, that they are handed out like candy. That many lose impact or...
The city of Canby has passed around 25 proclamations, each of which came in the last 2 years. This averages to about one in every meeting, though the actual number varies widely. Some meetings have no proclamations, while others have two, three, or even as many as half a dozen. Most of them are annual proclamations coinciding with state and national observances like Iwo Jima Remembrance Day or the anniversary of 9/11, Patriots Day. Others highlight local events or achievements like the annual Kiwanis Food and Toy Drive. But two dozen is just too many, according to Mayor Hodson and some council members, including whom Hodson quoted as saying, "They are handed out like candy." Their concern is that so many proclamations takes away from the significance of those honoring particularly important national holidays or historic observances. Should Walk and Bike Challenge Month, for example, be held on the same level as POWMIA Recognition Day? That's the difficulty Mayor Hodson and his appointed working group of counselors faced, trying to recognize the importance of all the city's organizations and endeavors while balancing the special significance certain observances hold for many people. Hodson said the process by which proclamations are presented and approved is not something covered by the city charter, so the mayor has traditionally assumed responsibility for them at his or her discretion. Hodson has kept the practice ever since he was first elected mayor 7 years ago because of the significance that they hold for him and many other Canby residents.
In this instance, the proclamation process is not enumerated with the city council body. Therefore, the process rests with me, the mayor. The decision to do them or not, which ones to do or not to do. I find proclamations to be significant. So not doing them at all is not an option for me. Doing all that are requested is not always an option either. Almost the entire council and some previous councilors think that we do too many already at the 20.
So proclamations will stay, but they'll be treated differently starting in 2020. Mayor Hodson said he has pared down the list of cities' proclamations and will limit them to approximately 6 or 8 per year. Any organizations or groups that have enjoyed standing proclamations in the past will be notified of the new policy and will instead be invited to speak at city council meetings to share announcements about events, campaigns, and achievements. Mayor Hodson also said he will not consider any proclamation that recognizes groups based on race, sex, gender, age, religion, nation of origin, or sexual orientation or gender identity. While this policy would preempt the future request for a proclamation recognizing Transgender Day of Visibility or any other LGBTQ inclusive holiday, it does seem largely in line with the proclamations Mayor Hodson has approved in the past. There have been a few outliers, such as a Women's History Month proclamation in 2018, which coincided with the Cambie Heritage and Landmark Commission's completion of its local Women's History Walk, and one recognizing Martin Luther King Jr. Day earlier this year, which honored King's legacy to the civil rights movement, but was really more directly aimed at promoting local acts of service in Cambie. But the vast majority of proclamations the city has seen in recent years have been either broadly inclusive or, if anything, limited only on the basis of military service or civic achievements. Mayor Hodson concluded by inviting anyone who has questions about the proclamations or new policy, or anyone who wishes to request one, to email him at hodsonb@cambieoregon.gov.
The Early Learning Hub of Clackamas County is once again launching the Make a Splash Children's Free Rain Boot Program through October 25th, 2019, or while supplies last. This program will provide free Oki rain boots to children ages 6 and younger who qualify for income assistance programs. Playing outside, rain or shine, helps children develop their imaginations, fine and gross motor skills, scientific thinking, and problem solving, said Chelsea Hamilton, Early Learning Program Planner for Clackamas County's Children, Family, and Community Connections Division. Early Learning Hub officials at the county approached Oki about the need of young children for rain boots for young children in Clackamas County. The Vancouver-based company agreed to partner for this program and have been instrumental in its success. In a statement, Oki expressed the importance of being outdoors in children's development. We believe exploration and exposure to our natural environment will open doors to greater possibilities for learning. Outdoor gear allows children to explore their natural environment while staying safe and dry. The Early Learning Hub of Clackamas County is an organized group of people supporting children prenatally through 6 years and their families. There are 16 early learning hubs in Oregon that collaborate with early childhood programs to translate the research on early development into results-oriented interventions and programs. One of the hub's goals is for children to be supported to enter school ready to succeed, and Make a Splash is one of the many programs that offer children that opportunity. Families who live in Clackamas County with children ages 6 and younger that qualify for any income assistance program are eligible for free rain boots. The qualifying programs include the Oregon Trail Card, OHP and CHIP, Section 8, WIC, Free and Reduced School Lunch, TANF, and Head Start. Community partners serving eligible families can submit a request form on their behalf. The Early Learning Hub will coordinate the delivery of the boots to the partnering organizations and distribution to families. For more information, please email makeasplashclackamas@gmail.com or call 503-650-5682. The Clackamas County Community Road Fund Advisory Committee will hold its fourth meeting from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, September 26th, in rooms 119 and 120 of the Development Services Building, 150 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City. The public is welcome to attend. The 15-member committee is charged with reviewing proposed transportation construction projects to relieve congestion and recommending project priorities to the Board of Commissioners. Projects will be funded with revenue from the new countywide vehicle registration fee, which will go into effect January 2020. The primary focus at the September 26th meeting will be to review recommended safety and local road paving projects, that will also be funded with vehicle registration fee revenue, and to discuss prioritizing congestion relief efforts. Transportation construction projects to be paid for with funds from the new Community Road Fund will be recommended to the Board of County Commissioners this fall. Revenue from the $30 per year countywide vehicle registration fee approved by the Board of Commissioners in February 2019 will go into the new Community Road Fund for projects to relieve congestion, improve safety, and maintain local roads. The advisory committee will focus on identifying the top congestion relief projects to be funded first with the new revenue. Recommendations will be presented to the Board of Commissioners, who will make the final decision about what projects will move forward first.
You know, Halloween will be here before you know it. Heck, the decorations are already in the stores. So I've got a scary good deal for you. DirectLink is offering 50% off their blazing fast internet speeds now through All Hallows Eve. Not only will you get a sweet candy corn of a deal, but every one of their broadband connections comes with unlimited data, free. And that's no trick. So switch to DirectLink to stream and surf as much as you like. Plus, take advantage of free Wi-Fi home networking for 6 months with free installation of commercial-grade Wi-Fi equipment that ensures your entire home has the strongest, most consistent signal in every room. Talk about a treat. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop for blazing fast internet.
Located just off the corner of 13th and South Ivy is one of the most magical places on earth, Puddin' River Chocolates. That's where Chief Chocolatier Teresa Sassy and her team of Oompa Loompa, employees, handmake some of the richest, most delicious gourmet chocolates you can find anywhere. Yeah, that's right. Willy Wonka wishes he was this good. Teresa uses the highest quality free trade cocoa from around the globe and locally sourced hazelnuts, berries, and other ingredients to create world-class confections that are a treat to the eyes and the taste buds. And they do more than chocolate. The classic fondue is an ideal blend of Swiss cheese, wine, and spices that you have got to try. Puddin' River's creations make a great gift for a loved one, or hey, for yourself, because you know what? You deserve it.
I deserve it, Frankie!
Find them at PuddinRiverChocolates.com.
Welcome back, listeners. On the Cameron Conversation today, I'd like to introduce you to Bob Kaufman.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob.
I got a nickname.
You got a nickname? Oh. He just passed me a little slip of paper, and it says Bob, in quotation marks, Hope Kaufman. Are you a little bit of a comedian, Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I got that.
Why do they call you that, Nick? Why'd you get that?
I was so energetic about the retirement community and getting it started, I guess, in the beginning.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
one of the our pastors at church.
Yeah. I love that. What church?
Yeah, Zion Mennonite Church.
Zion Mennonite, I love it. So as you mentioned, Bob, you are a resident here at the Hope Village Senior Living Community and the second to move in its history. And we're very involved with the history of starting it and how it first got incorporated. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So I was wondering if you could tell us the story of Hope Village. It started back officially in the 1980s, but did it have kind of roots and rumblings before that?
Oh, yes, very much so. It started back at probably about 1956 when I was working for Ivan Krupp.
Oh, okay.
Had a sawmill out at Yoder.
Gotcha.
And he was a project manager of a new church building that we built there at Zion. And I worked for him at that time as a carpenter. And he, at the time, you know, he said it would be nice if we could maybe start a retirement community right here in this field next to the church. And so we kind of pursued that idea in the beginning after the board was formed, but we soon realized that that was too far out in the country to provide the services that we wanted to provide our residents, like sewer and water and et cetera.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to get some of those services and some of that infrastructure out to the country because Zion Mennonite is out in kind of rural Hubbard area. My in-laws actually live down the street from there, so it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be tough. So, and you guys have all your, you know, you got baseball and all kinds of stuff that your activities you guys do here at Hope Village, that'd be hard to do out there. I'm just teasing you, but
Yeah, we play beanbag baseball, and it's really getting to catch on interest from the residents.
Yeah, yeah. Who's the best beanbag player?
Oh, we're about all equal.
About all equal?
Yeah.
You're not going to claim that you're the best. You're so humble, Bob. That's what I love about you. So that original site, it didn't work, but I think the church continued to be involved in the efforts, right?
Oh, yeah, very much so. And then we joined with Calvary Mennonite churches in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And after we got started, we soon realized this was too big a project for our two small communities, churches. Mm-hmm. And so we opened it up to other churches that wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah. Do you recall the original reasoning? I mean, I think there were kind of some practical reasons that there were seniors in our community and in our area that just needed that care.
Yes.
But for the churches to be involved, my understanding is that there was a real desire to create a community. I mean, it's in the name, Hope Village, a real community around some of the faith, some of the values from the Christian faith, just as far as giving folks, senior folks, kind of a positive, nourishing community in all aspects of life, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it didn't have the name Hope. Mm. We just wanted to start a retirement community. Mm. And it was later on when the Hope name appeared, surfaced.
Yeah.
And HOPE stands for Housing Outreach Project for the Elderly.
Oh, I didn't realize it was an acronym.
That's how it got its name.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was just the word HOPE. That's cool. So Housing Outreach Project for the Elderly.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So what time period are we in now when Calvary and some of the other churches came on? That was in the 60s maybe, or?
That was I'm guessing about 1982.
Okay.
Is when they kind of got together then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then what happened?
Well, then they had an attorney that they knew of in Woodburn. His name was Marv Bolin.
Hmm.
And he helped the people in the beginning draw up some corporation papers,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted to get a status with the state and federal government.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be a 501c3,
mm-hmm.
so it's a nonprofit enterprise. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you recall of being that process as far as the community's involvement with it, the community's support for it? I'm very interested in kind of the feel of that initial stage when you're going through the planning process and this is starting to really look like a thing. I mean, was it a lot of public meetings and stuff? What was that process like?
Oh, yes, meetings, I guess. We met at least once a month and sometimes oftener than that.
Yeah.
And it was just like kind of chasing after the wind there in the beginning because we didn't have a site.
Mm.
And so it took, I think, about 6 years. We looked at seven different sites, I think.
Yeah.
We looked, considered Molalla. We considered, we looked at one in Silverton. We looked one in Woodburn.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at two different sites in Hubbard.
Hmm.
And none of them seemed to fit the pattern. In fact, well, towards the end there, we had, Ivan bought 51 acres of land right at east edge of Hubbard.
Hmm.
And we thought this would be an ideal spot.
Yeah.
But then as we pursued that, it was out of the urban growth boundary at that time.
Hmm.
And so the state wouldn't give us
approval. Yeah. Yeah,
and so from then on, then we floundered for a couple more years, and then finally one of our board members found out that this 32-acre filbert orchard on the south edge of Canby was going to be put on the market for sale.
Hmm.
And so we approached the party that owned it. Berkmeyer's.
Yeah.
And before that, the board member, his name was Maynard Knopfsinger. He took them down to Albany and mm-hmm. showed them what we were trying to start here in Canby.
Okay, so what was the inspiration?
Yes.
What did he show them? There was a retirement community down there that it was kind of modeled off of?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a sister project similar to what Hope is now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was designed for, you know, to take care of the elderly. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think, 75 years old now.
Hmm. Were you part of that initial meeting with Birkmeyer Farms?
Not really. I was on the board, but I wasn't.
What do you recall their feelings about the project? I mean, obviously they were supportive and became the...
Yeah, they were very much interested in what we were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And so they, we finally approached them, and we made an offer. We made a down payment of $4,500.
Yeah,
which is peanuts in this day.
Oh my gosh, hazelnuts maybe. No, that's crazy. $4,500. That was just a down payment, but still, that's cool. And I mean, I don't know what their feeling was or what their reason was for selling, but you got to imagine they probably did feel good about, you know, if they have to sell some of their land for it to be able to go to this nonprofit that's going to support seniors in need in our area. They must have been pretty psyched about that.
Well, I think the reason they initiated that. Their interest in selling was that it was too close to the edge of town because they pruned the orchard. You know, they always had to burn the brush and trimmings, and it was getting too close to the edge of town to do that kind of an operation.
Gotcha. Yeah, you don't want to be setting Cambie on fire. That would be no good. So, cool. So you had a spot. You had a site. What happened then?
Well, then we didn't have any money to really get this project started.
Yeah.
And so...
what was the initial plan as far as what... Because I think it was done in phases, right?
Yeah.
What was the first phase? Like, how many houses? What was part of that first phase? Do you recall?
Well, the first phase was just to make a niche in the orchard to get our entrance in and make it wide enough that we had enough trees removed to build row one, get our sewer and water line in, and so that's how we started that. And another thing that really helped us in the beginning, we had, I think, four parties that were going to move in, prepay their lease, and so we had that money to work on to cover our construction costs in the beginning.
Yeah, that's nice.
And then...
Were you part of that original four?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then another thing, we negotiated with Ivan Krupp that he gave us a $450,000 loan to start with our initial development.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
It was always Ivan's vision in the very beginning about building retirement. You know, that's where it really started.
With him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Why do you think he wanted to do that so badly? Why was that his dream?
Well, I don't know. He just, he always sensed there was a need, you know, to take care of our elderly.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So when did you move in?
We moved in 1997.
Okay.
We were the second residents to move in.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've lived here over 22 years now.
Yeah.
And this is the best place we have ever lived.
Yeah. Yeah. What different places have you lived?
Oh, we lived in off Esconce Road out south, and we moved from there to, we made several different moves until we had a home built out in northwest of Aurora in Cedarbrook, and we lived there 16 years in, and then initially we were planning on moving to Hope, but Hope wasn't ready at that time, and
So between... 1983 was when the incorporation papers were created. You've got a timeline over here. The down payment to Birkmeyer was in 1989. 1992, the board announced the conditions for closing had been met and the down payment would be made at that. By then it was $95,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Went to Canby Planning Commission in July of 1995. Jerry Barkman started as executive director.
Yeah.
The board negotiated a loan of $450,000 from Ivan Krupp. You mentioned that, to develop the infrastructure. There's a groundbreaking April 21st of 1996. Do you recall the groundbreaking? Do you recall that, the groundbreaking ceremony? What was that like?
Well, we had it right here on the corner of 13th and Ivy.
Uh-huh.
In fact, we put up a sign there a few years before that this was going to be the future site of a Christian retirement community.
Hmm.
And then we had our groundbreaking there. Ivan was part of that. Hmm. Harold Yoder was another member of the board at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
I think it was kind of a wet day that day because we had our...
In April it would have been, yeah.
Yeah. We had our program over at the Adult Center.
Oh, okay. So yeah. So it was there by then. The... So do you remember if there were like dignitaries there or just maybe local folks or anybody from the state or anything like that or for the groundbreaking?
Well, there was different dignitaries there, I think. I think the mayor was there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so sure whether Kurt Schrader was there at that time either. He was a member of the Planning Commission, I believe, at that time.
Mm, okay. Interesting. Yeah, might have been there. Cool. So you moved in 97, second to move in, and yeah. You said that this is the best place you've ever lived. Tell me why.
Well, everything is taken care of. I don't have to mow the lawn anymore.
That sounds great to me, I got to say.
And if an appliance fails, why, you just call maintenance and they replace your appliance.
Yeah.
You know, it's just almost carefree living if
sure.
you want to do it that way.
Sure.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. When we come back, we'll be bringing you more of our conversation with Bill Kaufman, where he tells us about the community that is at Hope Village, including the time he bumped into his former English teacher.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved him $14,000 in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hills, NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined.
So the initial idea for Hope Village was, we kind of mentioned it before, but to create a community, you know, of the residents, a supportive community, folks that care about each other, take care of each other. Do you feel like that vision has come to pass?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about what it's like.
There are some people that don't want to get involved. You know, that's just their lifestyle.
Sure.
That's okay.
Yeah.
But for others that are really active and involved and supporting and looking out for their neighbors, you know, it's just like one big happy family here.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. That's great. What's the kind of like day-to-day life here at Hope Village?
Well, for me, I go over to community center about every morning just like I was going to work.
Mm.
But when I get there, you know, maybe I'll work an hour or 2 hours, or depending on if there's an event to set up for, or, you know, it maybe take a little longer. But
yeah. 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 So you go over there and volunteer and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And Can you tell me about some of the friendships or relationships? Have you met folks here at Hope Village that you didn't know from before? Or, you know, have you had lifelong friends that have moved here and now you get to see them more often? Or?
Oh, yes. I recall clear back when Marquee first started up, when they finally got a bus to take people to appointments, you know, dentists. And one morning, this lady came on board, and they always give me a paper with the name of the person and where I should take them. And so when she got on board, her name was June Hopkins. And I thought, June Hopkins, I think that used to be my English teacher.
No way.
And so when she got on board, I asked her, I said, where did you used to teach? And she said, North Marion. I said, you taught English, didn't you? She said, yeah. I said, well, you're my former English teacher. And she got the biggest bang out of that.
I bet. Was she a good teacher?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Any other stories like that?
Margaret Burkmeyer, was a resident over, I think, at Marquee at the assisted living. And so she got to benefited from some of the ideas in the beginning, you know, when they sold the place to us, you know, that she actually benefited from that sale, I guess.
That's cool. Yeah, so she ultimately became a resident here or just received some services at Marquee?
I'm not sure if she was a resident in the beginning or not. Her husband died, I think, about the time at that time, and I'm not sure.
So we can maybe clarify that a little bit because it does get confused, including myself got confused because I went to Marquee before this. So there's Marquee Hope Village, which is on the property of Hope Village and is, as you mentioned, an assisted living facility. So that's where folks, senior folks live who maybe need a little more of the day-to-day care or more help with day-to-day activities. And then there's Hope Village, which has the rows of garden homes and things kind of surrounding Marquee, and that's just more of a senior living community. Did I get that right?
I think so. Yeah. And also the difference, Hope Village is a nonprofit organization. Marquee is a for-profit.
Gotcha.
So we have these two working side by side, but it's been a real good partnership that in fact, in the beginning, we were trying to develop that community that had full service. In other words, it'd be like a CCRC, a community, continue care retirement community. Mm. And of course, in the beginning, we didn't have money to expand that much that fast.
Yeah.
And so one evening, Phil Fogg came to our board meeting and gave us this proposal about maybe leasing some land so they could develop the facility that we have now.
Cool.
And we thought about that just a short time, and we thought, well, boy, that's might be a good idea because that's what we wanted to have overall in the end, you know, to have all the services.
Right, for sure.
And so they leased the land. Hope Village owns the land that building sits on.
Hmm.
And so they pay us a rent for the land.
Cool. Okay, I was going to ask you about that. So Hope Village owns the land. Marquee rents or leases the land for their facility.
Yeah.
And they're building over there now, which is cool. They're building a
memory care
wing, which is great and very needed.
Yes, very much.
Yeah. How many folks live at Hope Village? Do you know?
We have 126 garden homes, and then we built 12 more units of, we call them cottages, which is across First Street to the west. And that's full, too.
Yeah. And yeah, there's a waiting list to get in here.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We have
friends of mine, the Grotskys, were on a waiting list for a long time wanting to get in here. They've moved here now, but yeah.
The last report I heard that we have 44 people, their names on the list to move into Hope.
Yeah, yeah. Why do you think that is? Why do folks want to live here?
Well, I think the word of mouth is getting around. You know, you're...
Wait a minute. Do senior folks talk to each other, Bob? I didn't realize this.
Oh, yes. And word of mouth is your best advertising that you can get.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And the word's getting out now, I think. You know, people come from, as far as Portland and the Molalla area and, you know, just the surrounding areas. Mm.
Yeah. And is it primarily Hope Village and the amenities here, or do folks that come from outside of Canby, they kind of like the Canby community as well, kind of like what the community has to offer?
Well, I think Canby is still far enough out from Portland that it's kind of a rural area. And yeah. I think some people like that.
Yeah. 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 People talk about all the time kind of that small town feel that Canby has and tries to preserve. So you guys do some other stuff here at Hope Village as far as there's a community garden, I think. What are some of the other activities and things that happen here? I still just want to give people a little bit of a feel for what life is like at Hope Village.
Well, some of our biggest events is we have a garage sale every April. Mm-hmm. In fact, last year we broke our record from the previous year in sales.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is a crazy event. We've actually had it on the podcast before where they, you know, it goes all day and there's like lines out the door and it's, you fill up this huge room with all this stuff. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we always give 10% of our net sales to local charities like Canby Care, Canby Adult Center.
Canby Center. And, yeah.
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 And then in the fall, we have a bazaar, which is not quite as big, but there's a lot of vendors that come in to sell their things that they've made.
Wow, that sounds like a really fun thing.
And then
thing.
We have a drive-in, cruise-in, and that was well supported this year. It was bigger than it's ever been. And then we have also, we have birthday parties and different events that we set up.
Yeah. Cool. Bob, do you ever get the chance to, do you ever just kind of sit back and reflect? I mean, you were part of the initial effort to create this community. You live here now. You've lived here for 22 years. Do you ever just like look back and are kind of like, wow, you know, like it kind of grew in a way that you didn't expect, or it's exactly what you would have hoped for, or what's your reflection when you look back?
Well, I think it pretty well developed into what I had envisioned.
Good.
In the beginning too, along with a lot of other people too that had this vision. And it goes back until when I was a youth. My great aunt lived in Virginia. They had a dairy farm there and they sold it and they went down to Florida and started retirement community down in Sarasota, Florida.
Florida, that was the original retirement community, right? Like I remember when I was a kid and like you didn't have retirement communities kind of in all over the place like you do now. And a lot of folks moved to Florida in their retirement. That was kind of at least on the East Coast where I grew up.
The first thing that I can remember as a youth, you know, they had places where they had old people, but they called the old people's home.
Right, right. They weren't retirement communities.
No.
Yeah. And they, I mean, I think it's fair to say, at least in that era, 20, 30 years ago, it was often not, old people's homes often weren't nice places or places where folks wanted to go. I mean, when you say that, that's
fair.
Where they had to go.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, but this is what you would have hoped for when you were part of that initial effort.
Oh, yes, very much.
Yeah, cool.
In fact, I visited that place in Sarasota, Florida.
Yeah?
I visited a site in Phoenix, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the Albany site. And then I visited one up in south of Silverton. Forget the name of community right now. But anyhow, when I compare Hope Village with all these other sites that I've visited, I think we've got the best.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's fair. I mean, you're not biased, I don't think. So fair and unbiased, right?
We had a real good architect in the beginning, Karkat Kostik Arbuckle from Salem.
Cool.
And they had a fellow working with them.
Can you say that firm again, that name?
Kostik Arbuckle.
I love that. That's such a cool name.
They had a man working for him. His name was Wayne Woolsey.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that really designed our floor plans on our garden homes and done a super job.
Cool.
And another thing outstanding about this man, and in the summertime on his vacation, he would go up to Alaska and work with the Eskimos up there.
That's cool. He would work with the natives.
It was
kind of
a mission that he had.
Yeah, that's awesome. What a great guy. Did he incorporate, is that why the garden homes here are igloo shaped? Just teasing you about.
We have three different floor plans in the garden homes. Uh-huh. And the B unit is, we have an A unit and a B unit and a C unit. Cool. And we chose the B unit. And I think that's the best one of the three.
Sure, sure. Cool. Cool. Well, we are almost out of time. Do you have anything else you'd like to add or tell folks about, either from the history of Hope Village or what life is like here now?
Not more than we purchased some more land to the south of us now that we have rough drawings how we're going to like to develop this. But it has to go through the planning process and all that. And so that may take a year or so to get that all approved. And
Yeah, but the need is obviously there with that waiting list. The aging population is continuing to grow. Yes. So, it sounds like that'll be needed now and in the continuing future. Do you have any idea how many homes or units you're looking to add through that expansion? Or
I don't have the exact number, but it'll be, it's 14 acres. And so if you compare that with a 32, it would be about half the size.
Maybe add around 50-60 units.
More than that.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Bob, for telling us about the history. It's a fascinating history, I think, and I love just hearing your stories and what life here is like. Thanks for being on the show.
Working here at Hope Village as a volunteer is the most rewarding job that I have ever had in my whole working career.
Really? That's great.
And I had a couple. When I retired, I looked over my back over my working career, and there were three jobs that kind of stood out. Mm-hmm. And the first one was the most interesting job I ever had, and that was working on a 15-story Red Lion motor inn at the Lloyd Center.
Oh, cool.
And then from there, I had a chance to go to work at Emanuel Hospital.
Yeah.
And I worked there 13 years in carpenter maintenance. That was the best job I ever had. Mm. But when I started working at Hope Village, it was the most rewarding job I ever had.
Yeah. Well, you just wait, Bob, because we're going to set you up with an internship program on the Can Be Now podcast. And that's going to be the best and most rewarding job you've ever had. So how's that sound? Can I sign you up?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, thanks, Bob.
Yeah.
Are you a small business owner or maybe thinking of investing in yourself with your very own startup? Awesome. Now all you have to do is reach potential customers at a time when consumers have never been more fragmented, more distracted, or more difficult to reach. If that sounds hard, believe me, it is. That's why I make Frankie do it.
Carrie and her team at Promotional Strategies offer strategic, purposeful solutions to build your brand with lasting promotional items that make sense for you and your company. They are creative geniuses who will deliver advertisements that people actually thank you for and will use every day. We've tried other sellers, and we trust Carrie to provide high-quality branded items that we can be proud of. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
The Can Be Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
Can Be Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
Huge thank you as well to our supporters on Patreon. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we seriously love. For information on how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, a patron of the Can Be Now podcast, visit canbenowpod.com/plus.